We're holding on page 126 in Nedarim, seven lines or so from the top, middle of Os Chafei. The last thing we learned was the explanation of a pasuk in Tehillim about Maskil Adol, the person who shows wisdom and intelligence in how to help out the dull, which we said the word dal can mean a poor person, but here in the context of our Gemara we said it meant a sick person, so a person who is mevaka chola, we said he gets a reward in this world besides for that he gets saved from Dina Shel Gehenim. And the last thing was we said, they shouldn't end up with the desire of his enemies, meaning that instead of getting bad advice from those who turn out to be enemies from him, the Eibishter will help that instead he gets good advice. And we contrasted in that regard, we had Naaman who got good advice from his retainers about to go and listen to Elisha and dip in the Yarden versus Rechavam who got bad advice from his advisors to go and try to lord it over the Jewish people and the result was that 10 of the Shvatim broke away from his kingdom. To lord it over, like to show them I'm boss and you better listen to me or else. Okay, so in this connection the Gemara brings Tanya, Reb Shimon Elazar Omer. You want to see now with Rechavam, we find in the Pesukim that first it says he asked his elder advisors, the ones who had been around in Shlomo HaMelech's times, and they tell him, you know, the people are asking you to go easy on them and lighten their tax burdens or whatever. So the elder advisors tell him, you know what, listen to them. They tell him if today you'll be a servant to the people and you'll speak nicely to them, then they'll be loyal to you and they'll be your subjects. And then Rechavam doesn't want to listen to them, and instead he asks the younger set of advisors, and they tell him, no, put your foot down, show them that you're boss, and they better listen to you or else. And in fact, he said, make it that you're going to be even stronger and harsher than Shlomo was. And the result was he listened to them, and everything developed from there. So, Tanya, Reb Shimon Elazar Omer, im yomer l'chazkenim stir, if you have older people who tell you to tear down the Lodim Bnei, and then you have younger people who tell you to build Sturv Al Tivna. Tear down, listen to the older ones and tear down, rather than listen to the younger ones and building. Because when the older people are telling you to tear down, that itself is a building thing. That's a constructive thing, and you'll end up better with that. When the younger ones are telling you to build, they're being too hasty about it, and the result is that it's going to end up being a destruction. Rechavam and Shlomo, as we see from the story of Rechavam. So here, on the face of it, the elders are telling him to break down Stira, to break down his kingship, make it that you're going to be that you're going to be subject to them rather than the other way around. But if he had listened to them, there would have been a binyan because everybody would have accepted his kingship, and that would have been that. Meanwhile, the younger ones are telling him no. Tell him that you're the boss, and you're going to be building even more than your father Shlomo was. That's the binyan, but it turned out to be a Stira because it turned out that everybody said, we don't need you as king, and we're rebelling against you, and that was that, and 10 of the Shvatim left him. In fact, actually, the Malbim on the Pasuk has an interesting point. Even the Zkenim didn't truly mean that he should be subservient, that he should be subject to the people. They say the expression, if today, right now, when they're asking you, then you'd speak to them nicely and tell them, sure, I'll do whatever you want. Afterwards, you don't necessarily have to keep their promises to them, but at least today, show them that you're friendly and willing to listen to what they have to say, and Rechavam wasn't even willing to do that. Anyway, so that's also part of this binyan, stiras kainim binyan. Here they're telling him just for a short while, pretend like you're going to be subservient to whatever they do, and if he had done that, then he would have been a lot better off. There's an interesting Tosefta that says this point from the Gemara, but says it like in an even more dramatic way. If young people tell you to build the Bis Mikdash and old people tell you to tear it down, then you should still listen to the older one, says the Tosefta. Ad kadekach. Marshall explains the metaphor of it can be, let's say, for example, imagine a person has a house. He wants to build another story on top of it. So the younger ones tell him, go ahead, build on top of it. You have room, you have the zoning laws allow it and everything. Meanwhile, the older advisors are telling you, you know what, you would do better first to, the, it may not, the, you have the, fine, the zoning and everything will allow it, but on the other hand, the walls of your current house may not be strong enough to take all that extra weight. Better that you should tear them down and rebuild them more strongly, and then you'll be able to build the second floor on top of it. So now the older ones are telling you, stir, tear down, down in order to build. The younger ones are telling you just go ahead and build. That's the example where if you listen to the older ones, you're likely to be a lot better off. Whereas if you go with the younger people's advice, then you're saving at the beginning, but you end up losing a lot more at the end. Yeah. So here the same thing. The elders are telling him go easy on them, go easy on them, and the younger ones are telling him no, go hard on them. Like tell them I'm going to build even more on what my father did, and it turned out to be counterproductive. So, with that said, though, I mean, sometimes we tack a fine. The young people are the ones who have all the fresh new ideas, and sometimes it's the older ones who are too cautious. And, we have Chabad houses all over the world that were built by Na'orim, where people jump in with 2 feet. So maybe, one possibility might be over here. I mean, first of all, obviously, it's not a hard and fast rule. But second of all, a lot of times we find that Zokin doesn't just mean somebody who's physically old. It means Zeshakona Chochma. I mean, somebody who has the Chochma of Torah. And vice versa, sometimes we use the word nar to mean somebody. The Gemara in some places mentions, for example, menu'orin min ha-mitzvahs. That a nar means somebody who's empty of mitzvahs. So maybe zokin and nar in Og, maybe zokinim and na'orim over here in the Gemara doesn't just mean physical age. We mean people who are giving you advice based on Torah, based on the Klamas, Zeshakana Chachma of Torah versus the Na'orim, who they may be physically older, but they're lacking that knowledge, that mentality of Torah, and therefore better to listen to the Skenim than to the Na'orim. Getting back to Bikur Cholim, the Gemara says, "Amar of Sheshes Breder of Idi, Loi Listu Inish Ktsira, Loi." A person should not go and visit the sick person. Listor, the word, the shorta Sa'ar in Aramaic, Samach Ayin Reish, means to visit, and it means to take care of. We talked about yesterday that Bikur Cholim means not only to visit the sick person, but also to take care of his needs, to look after what he needs. All of that is included in the word, in the shorta Sa'ar in Aramaic. You have there's a word the Gemara sometimes uses, sur, which means to examine. You have an expression, for example, in the Gemara, sur sakina, to examine a knife for shchita. So sur is another variant of that same word. So it means to examine and investigate what the person needs. And in fact, the Ran points out that at the beginning of the sugya we quoted the pasuk that Moshe says about Korach and his people that if ufkudas kol adam yipoked aleihem, if they end up being sick in bed and people come to be mevakel chola, then it'll show Hashem is not standing up for the truth of Moshe's nevuah, and therefore lo Hashem shlachani. So the word ufkudas kol adam in Targum was actually translated, ufkudas is translated as siara, which is the same word that we have over here. Which is the same word over here, lis, or same shodesh. So in other words, the direct translation of Bikur Cholim in Aramaic is so'ar, is to come and visit and investigate what he needs. So now, Rav Sheshes Breder of Idi is saying, lo lisur inish ktsira, a person should not come and visit and check on the situation of a sick person, loy betlas shoy kamaisa diyoma, not during the first 3 hours of the day, v'loy betlas shoy basraisa diyoma, and not during the last 3 hours of the day. The reason is, ki hefi v'loy lesach daiti min rachmi, so that he doesn't get distracted from rachmim, from davening. One of the purposes of Bikur Cholim, after all, is to daven on behalf of a sick person, but during the first 3 and last 3 hours of the day, that will be counterproductive. Betlas shoy kamaisa revicha daiti, during the first 3 hours of the day, the patient usually feels better. We find the Gemara in Baba Basra that mentions the Evan Tova, the precious stone that Abraham used to wear around his neck, and then after he passed away, the Abish to put it in the sun, and because of that, when the sun is rising during the first few hours of the day, sick people usually feel better. So now the visitor is going to say, oh, he's a lot better, then I don't need to daven for him. Basraisa, in the last 3 hours of the day, Takif Choshe, he's feeling much weaker. So then, Faker, if you visit him, you're likely to say, wait a minute, this guy's a goner, why should I daven for him? So therefore, better to visit him during the middle hours of the day, so you don't have these issues. We talked about yesterday, the Yerushalmi also mentions that generally speaking, you shouldn't visit him during the first 3 days of the illness unless it's a sudden thing. The Meiri explains that the basis for that Yerushalmi being basically you don't want to worry the person too much. If he sees that people are visiting him, then it's going to start making him think, you know what, I must be really dangerously ill if people are coming to visit me. And so that once 3 days have passed, then already he's kind of made his peace with that himself. I'm obviously very ill. With that, so this is brought in Shulchan Aruch with the caveat that if he becomes sick, if he becomes suddenly sick, like out of the blue, then by all means go and visit him even the first day, because then obviously, again, he's going to realize that it's pretty serious. Anyway, he was...
Obviously, he's going to be alive when?
He's going to realize it's very serious if it was an all-of-a-sudden thing. So, but here the Gemara is saying the first three and last 3 hours of the day. Interestingly, the Rambam, by the way, brings a different reason for not coming during the first three and last 3 hours of the day. The Rambam gives the reason because the doctors are treating him then, so you don't want to get in the way of the doctors. So Noisa Kalim on the Rambam asks, why does he give the reason in the Gemara over here? And they explain that Rambam did not have this line in the Gemara. He didn't have in his Girsa the line that explains over here why. So the Rambam, according to the Rambam's Girsa, it just said don't visit during the first three and last 3 hours of the day. And the Rambam, being a doctor, he used his own experience to explain that that would be why it is. Okay. Another thing about sick people, Amar of Oven Amar Rab, Minayin Shakarish Bochu Zonis Achoyla. How do we know that Hashem sustains a sick person? Meaning, in other words, that sometimes you have, sometimes a person is very sick and they lose their appetite and they may go a couple of days without eating. How does that work? How do they survive that? It's because the Eibush to put a person in a person, he put reserves that a person is able to live off that for a while. The Gemara elsewhere phrases it, the Gemara in Sanhedrin that phrases it, Ishsa Zaine, the fever itself sustains the person, like the body lives off its reserves while it's feverish for a couple of days. So that's included in that Hashem sustains the sick person, that Hashem gives him the ability to be able to manage with that. So how do we know that? Now, Ian Yaakov points out, I mean, Hashem supports, Hashem sustains everyone, but the point is that the chiddush is, here we have a choyla, his mazel is bad, so you need a special raya that the Eibishter is sustaining him even during that time, and that the fever itself is sustaining him. So how do we know? Dershenema, another pasuk from Kapitel Mem Aleph that we were learning Psukim of yesterday in the Jerusha, Hashem Yisadenu al Eres Devoy, Hashem will sustain him, will support him. The word Yisadenu is Meloshen Suda, like the Lechem Levav Enish Yisod, that a person is sustained by bread. So Hashem sustains him and nourishes him al Eres Devoy on his bed of sickness. All of his bedding you turned over in his illness, meaning in other words that you have a person needs to be a person is sick in bed, you need to turn him every so often, and in any good hospital nowadays they make sure to turn the patient every so often, otherwise they develop bed sores. So the same way there's the pasuk is saying that Hashem helps the sick person with that. So the point is, Yisodenu, Meloshen, that Hashem supports him like Velechem Levav Enish Yisod. Another explanation, which the Meforish brings over here, and Rashi himself brings in Shabbos, Gemara is also in Shabbos, brings a girsa that the word Yisodenu, we can also read as if it said Yisorenu. We just said the Shodesh So'ar, Samach Ayin Reish, means to visit and to check on and then examine, so therefore we can also read the pasuk Hashem Yisarenu al Eres Devoy, which means that Hashem visits him when he's in his sickbed. So it's both. Yisodenu, that Hashem sustains and supports him, and also Yisarenu, as we put a resh instead of a dalet, which is a common thing that we do in Jerusha's Chazal, to say that also Hashem visits him and examines him.
While he's in
a sick bed, right. Mm-hmm. Another thing. How do we know that the Shechina rests above the bed of a sick person? Same thing. The same pasuk that it says that Hashem supports him on his sick bed. So it means, in other words, that the Shechina is there. Again, we can douch in Yisarenu that Hashem is visiting him, or Yisodenu that Hashem is supporting him, and that means the Shechina is actually there. We learn similarly in the Braisa, when a person comes to visit a sick person, the visitor should not sit on a bed, or on a chair, or a bench. Because now, the Ran brings that there are those who say that this would only apply if the sick person himself is lying on the floor. Because then it comes out that since we're saying the Shechina is there, it comes out the visitor is now sitting higher than the Shechina. But if the patient himself is in a bed, then Gesunta Heit, you can sit yourself on a bed or a chair or whatever, you're not sitting higher than the Shechina there. So Elamis Ata for Yoshev Agabe Karka, so rather the person should wrap himself out of respect for the Shechina, and that also, the Meiri points out, it has a practical effect also on the Chola. It makes him realize also that the Shechina is there, and therefore it motivates him to do Tshuva. Because like we're saying, the Shekhinah rests above the head of the sick person's bed, as the Pasuk says that Hashem supports him and Hashem visits him on his sick bed. The She'iltis, actually, the famous Sefer She'iltis from Rabbi Chaim Goin, one of the earliest Sfarim from after the time of the Gemara, adds another detail as well. He has it in his Girsa in the Gemara, or something Baal Peh. Anyway, he explains, we're saying the Shekhinah is above the head of the bed. Meanwhile, the Malach HaMavis is by the foot of the bed. Therefore, he says, you should be sitting near the middle of the bed, not by the head and not by the foot. Okay, so the Gemara goes on with a couple of, so the Gemara is going to get back to matters of Bikur Cholim, but then the Gemara digresses, having mentioned a statement from Rabbi Ovin Amar Rav, so the Gemara continues with a couple of other statements that are not directly related to the matter of a Cholim, and one of them is Omar Rovin or Omar Rav Ami Omar Rav. So the Girsa in the printed Gemara is Omar of Ami Omar Rav, but the Rashash points out that the Girsa we have here in Ein Yaakov, Omar Rovin, seems to be much better. Rovin is another name for Reb Ovin. A lot of the names in Amiroyim that we have that begin with a Resh are actually short for Reb and their name. Rava and Rabba, Rav Shuda Goin explains this in one of his letters. Rava and Rabba are short for Reb Abba. Raphram is short for Reb Ephraim. Ravina is short for Reb Avina and so forth. So Rovin is short for Reb Ovin. So having mentioned something that Reb Ovin says in the name of Rav, so now the Gemara is bringing another thing that Rovin says, because that's the Gemara often does that kind of thing. Anyway, my dichtiv, what does it mean like this? The pasuk is in Sefer Yechezkel, you find a number of things where Hashem tells Yechezkel that you're going to be a moifes, you're going to be a living example for the Jewish people of what's going to go on at the time of the Churban and the Golos. Yechezkel started to say Nevuah a few years before Churban by his tradition. He's living in Bavel. He was one of the Chorash V'Hamasker, the great Talmid Chacham who had been brought into Golos 11 years before Churban by his tradition. So his Nevuahs are addressed to the Jews of Bavel, and he has to make them realize that the situation in Eretz Yisrael is very serious, and therefore as you're writing to them and as you're keeping in touch with your relatives who are in Eretz Yisrael, motivate them to do tshuva before the disaster hits.
Who is his name?
This is Yechezkel. So the Eidosh tells Yechezkel throughout his sefer, he tells him to do a number of symbolic things to demonstrate to the people what's going to happen. So one of them is, Hashem tells him at one point that he should act out how a person goes into Golos. This is Yechezkel, should do it, and everybody should learn from him, everybody should see from him, and they should take a lesson. So my dichtiv, so what does it mean? Hashem tells him, Ba'ata ben Adam, you ben Adam, which is Hashem's name for Yechezkel throughout the Sefer, Aseh lecha klei goyla. Hashem tells him, make for yourself kelim of golos. So what are kelim of golos? Now Hashem goes on to tell him, you're going to carry these things. You're going to act out as though like you're going into golos, carrying these few things that a person takes, and people will learn from you that this is what's going to happen. For one thing, actually, Hashem is telling him, the Medrash expands on this, that Hashem is telling Yechezkel to do this, so that, again, he's addressing the people in Bavel. Meanwhile, though, the people in Eretz Yisrael will find out about it as well. It should be an example for them. They should actually get ready to do this kind of thing as well, knowing that there's going to be a Golos. Let them prepare these things in advance, and that way it'll make that the actual experience of being taken in a chain of people to Bavel is not going to be as hard on them. The Medrash actually says, unfortunately, they didn't listen, and the result was the Medrash said one of the things we're going to say that Hashem told them to have is a bowl to be able to knead dough in. The Medrash actually has a slightly different list of things than we're going to have in the Gemara over here. We'll talk about that in a minute. But anyway, one of them was supposed to be a bowl that they could use, among other things, for kneading dough. So the Medrash says people didn't listen. When they ended up being taken into Golos, they didn't have any dishes with them. So when they wanted to bake bread, the Medrash says they would dig holes in the ground and then they would knead them and then they'd knead their dough and bake their dough in there. The result was the bread would be full of pebbles and dirt and whatever, and they'd bite into it and their teeth would crack on the pebbles. You have a pasuk in Eicha, Vayagris v'chotzat shina. The Navi says, Yirmiyah, who wrote Megillas Eicha, says Hashem cracked my teeth on gravel. That's the Medrash said. That refers to what happened as a result of this. We by the way, when we eat the egg and ashes and before Tisha B'Av, when we make the Sodom of Sekas, that's in as a remembrance of that. Anyway, but here, so to begin with, the Eibishter had told Yechezkel, show them how a person goes into Golos with the basic items that he needs, and that way the Eibishter intended that this way it'll be easier on them when the time comes. Anyway, so what are these clay gola? So Rovin or Rav Ami is saying, Zener, the first thing is a lamp. Marsha points out, in other words, the words clay gola suggests kalim that are specially meant for somebody who's going into Golos. So zener, so the first thing is a lamp, so they should have light, uka'ara, and a bowl, v'shatiach, and a mat. The Medrash has a slightly different list. The Medrash, that when it tells the whole story, has a slightly different list. It says that they should have a chemes, which is like a canteen or a container that they can store water or whatever in, and a bowl. So two of them are the same as here, the ka'ara and the shatiach. The third one, instead of a lamp, the Medrash has over there chemes. Actually, the Rosh in our Gemara has a different girsa. Instead of ner, a lamp, the Rosh has a girsa noid, which is another word for a chemes. It's also a skin bag that's used to hold water or other liquids like that. The Medrash also says each of these things is can do double duty. The canteen, according to the Medrash's version, or the noid, according to the Rosh's version over here, they can use it to store liquids like water, as well as they can keep flour in it. The bowl they can use to eat and to drink out of. The mat they can sit on and they can sleep on. So this way, like, they're getting the maximum use out of each of these things that they're taking with them. So Hashem is telling Yechezkel to prepare those things, and again, to act out how it's going to be when he goes into Golos. And this way everybody will learn from that. Now, in this connection, though, in Parshas Kisavoy, it says that there's going to come a point during the siege of Yerushalayim and other times like that. There's going to be a choser koil. The people are going to be lacking everything. So the Gemara is asking, what exactly is koil over here? So again, Omer Rovin Ba'abo, Omer Rav Ami, Omer Rav, the koil over here, in other words, we're meant to understand that it means, on the one hand, the choser koil could mean lacking everything, but I mean, the word koil can sometimes mean, can mean everything, it can mean anything, but in other words, the Gemara is assuming that it means one particular thing, where if a person is lacking it, then it's like he's lacking everything. So what is that one thing? Omer Rovin Ba'aba, or Omer Rav Ami Omer Rav, Blein Ner Uvaloi Shulchan. It means there's going to come a point when they're not going to have a lamp and they're not going to have a table. So before we were talking about when they're actually going into Golos, then they don't need a table, because a table you can't easily schlep with you. Then you want a mat to be able to do almost like a picnic on the ground. But when a person is living at home, which is where the Pasuk of Choser Koil is referring to that, it's referring to during the siege of Yerushalayim, people are going to be missing the most basic necessities. So Rovin or Rav Ami is explaining the basic necessities include a lamp and a table. People are not even going to have that at a time like that. Rav Chista Amar Beloy Isha. Rav Chista says another meaning of B'chosav Kol is a man's not going to have a wife. So Marashah explains, in other words, with all of this, that now you have like this. So you have a few different psukim in the Torah that use this word B'chosav Kol. One of them is talking about when there comes the point, v'achaltem b'sar b'neichem, there's going to come a point when they're so crazed by hunger from the seed that they're even going to be eating their children. There it actually mentions the husband, the wife, the children. So then you obviously can't say, Marshall says, that's not what it's talking about. V'choser kol would mean without a wife. Obviously the context of the psukim there is he has a wife. We're talking about a couple of psukim earlier when it mentions that the people are going to be lacking v'choser kol. So Chista is explaining that when a man has a wife, then at least, you know, first of all, tzorach z'rabim chatzinach, when two people are sharing trouble, then it makes it easier on them. It means he can consult with her and everything. So, but if he doesn't have that, then he really is lacking everything. So that's another meaning of b'chosav kol. Rav Sheshet Tzomah B'lo Shamash. Rav Sheshet says another meaning of b'chosav kol is a person is not going to have an attendant. Rav Sheshet himself was blind. He needed an attendant, so he can certainly appreciate what a person would be like without an attendant to help him. So he's saying that's what the Pasuk is referring to by b'chosav kol. Rav Nachman Omer B'lo Deya. Rav Nachman says another meaning of B'chosav Kol is a person is not going to have Deya. A person is not going to have the intelligence to know what to do. And that's the worst B'chosav Kol of all. Like, he's lacking that and he doesn't know what to do and he's all confused. Tana, and we learn in a Braisa, V'loi Melach V'loi Revol. Another meaning of B'chosav Kol, there's going to come a point when the people are going to be lacking salt and grease. Those are two things that help make food tasty. Bushett. So a person has his food, but it's bland. He doesn't have any salt, and he doesn't have any grease to put in it. And that's also part of what the pasuk is saying, b'chosek kol, that a person is going to be lacking that at this time. B'loy revav means grease.
Grease.
Yeah. Like oil or fat or whatever that you use to give a little flavor to food, yeah. So now, one of the opinions over here we said was Reb Nachman had said b'loy dea. So, by the way, Iyun Yaakov points out that, first of all, he points out a couple of these Amiroyim, again, are basing themselves on their own experience. Rav Chista himself, for example, the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin, he got married at 16. And he says, I would have been even better off if I'd gotten married at 14. So he could really appreciate the importance of having a wife. And therefore he says that b'choser kol means without a wife. As far as Rav Nachman, b'loy dea, Yun Yaakov points out, the word kol is the gematria 50. Now we talked before about the Nun Share Bina, the 50 gates of Bina. So b'choser kol represents that a person is going to be lacking all of that, all of the 50 gates, all of the 50 different understandings of the world that a person should have. Amun Abaya says in this connection, Naktinan, we have the Kabbalah from our Rebbeim, Ein Oni Ela B'deya. The true Oni is somebody who's lacking Deya. Meaning, in other words, obviously you have many different kinds of aniyim. You have a person who is poor in money and other things, but Maharsha says it can mean two things. First of all, in this pasuk, that when we're saying of a choser kol, that people are going to be lacking everything during the siege of Yerushalayim, is referring to, like Reb Nachman had said in particular, that it means that they're not going to have deya. And then Maharsha says, really, the true meaning of oni is, like Avaya is saying, ain oni ela b'deya. Then you have, as a shema mosho, as a borrowed term, we use oni for other contexts, such as a person who's lacking money. But the real intrinsic meaning of the word oni, Abaya is saying, is el b'deya. There is an explanation about this, actually, that we have this chokhmah, bina, and das. And we know, the Alter Rebbe talks about in Perek Gimel of Tanya, that the function of das is makasher daita b'kesher amitz. He strongly connects his mind to the Eibishter. He strongly connects with the chokhmah and bina that he's thought of over there. And without that, everything that comes of it is going to be, the Alter Rebbe says, dimyonis shav. It's going to be like just empty fantasies. So therefore, that would be what the Gemara is meaning. Over here, a person can have a lot of chokhmah and a lot of bina, but he doesn't have das, then it's not really accomplishing anything. Then he's left an oni, and everything that comes from his chokhmah and bina is not really going to accomplish anything meaningful. So the Gemara continues, B'mal Rava Amri, in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, they said an expression about this to explain how important das is. Didabe, this is the famous famous song. Too bad Rav Avraham is not here to be here to hear. But anyway, this is where the words of the song come from. Didabe, one who has this das in him, koila bay, then everything is in him. Like we said, b'choser kol means a lack of das. So if he has das, then he has everything. Deloy dabe, if he doesn't have this in him, ma bay, then what is there in him? Everything else that he has doesn't really count for anything.
What is connected to Avram? I never said.
Avram, who said anything about Avram?
It's a song.
I was saying Avram Fried, it's one of Avram Fried's songs, the dabe, yeah. Then they continued the expression didokoni, one who has acquired this, one who has acquired das, ma choser, what is he lacking? Didokoser, loikoni, one who is lacking and has not acquired das, ma koni, what has he acquired? Everything that he acquired is not going to be worth much. Why the double expression? I mean, it makes a very nice, catchy song, but why the double expression? So there's a few possibilities. Maharsha says that it means that there's das that a person needs as far as gashmius stick of things, everything that a person needs, the gashmius and the ruchnius, all depends on having proper das. So therefore, so we're mentioning the double expression, didabe and didakoni, referring respectively to gashmius and ruchnius. So he needs it for both of them. Iyun Yaakov explains another point as well, is that it refers to a person needs a rav and he needs a chover. So he's saying that so the dobe kolobe is referring to the das that he gets from his rav, or rather the das that the rav should be teaching his talmidim. So they're saying the dobe, if a person has das in him, then kolobe, then good, he's got everything and he is worthy to be a rav. Deloy dobe, but if he doesn't have this in him, ma be, then what's in him, what good would he be as a rav? And then when it comes to a Talmud, when it comes to a chover, whereas we say in Pirkei Avos, a pnei l'cha chover, you have to acquire for yourself a chover, so there they use the expression didokoni versus the didolekoni. Meaning, again, if you have somebody who has das, then he's a worthy chaver of yours, but if not, then not. And then Eitz Yosef mentions another point as well. Sometimes you have a person who naturally is a brainy person. Then you have a person who naturally is not so smart, but he's koine, he acquires it with effort. So therefore, so we're saying both. If a person naturally has daya and he works to develop it, then good, then he has everything. But if he's a naturally brainy person who doesn't work to develop his das in the right way, ma bay, then what's in him? Then you have the second kind of person, he doesn't naturally have a good head, but he works on it, dedokoni, if he works to acquire that das, that ma choser, then what else is he lacking? Deloy koni, but if he doesn't go to try and acquire it where it didn't come to him naturally, ma koni, then what else did he acquire? Whatever else he acquires is not worth much. In this connection, worth mentioning a story. I think I may have mentioned this before in the shir, a story from Tanit Ve'Eliyahu, where Eliyahu one time meets up with a poshut yid who doesn't know anything of Torah, and the guy is just joking around, and Eliyahu asks him, don't you realize you're going to eventually be in front of the Beis Din Shamayla? What are you going to, when they ask you, why don't you learn Torah? What are you going to tell them? So the guy says, I'm going to say that. Eibishter didn't give me intelligence for it. So Eliyahu asks him, what do you do for a living? So the guy tells him, I'm a fisherman. New, describe to me how a fisherman does his job. So the guy starts explaining after grow flax and weave nets and catch fish and put the nets in the water, b'chola. So Eliyahu tells him, so how do you have the intelligence for that? And the guy says, for that, the Eibishter gave me intelligence. So what, you think the Eibishter gave you intelligence for that and not for Torah, kikod of elecha adov ma'od? And the guy breaks down and starts crying, and Eliyahu tells him, you know what, that's a lot of people rationalize that way. They think they can get away with this excuse, but, you know, eventually they're gonna find out the truth. So this also fits with this as well. A person has a natural das. But if he's not using it for the right purposes, if he's only using it like this fisherman and none, and thinking I don't need it for Torah, then we're saying makoni, so all of his, everything that he acquired as far as his knowledge or as a fisherman is not really worth that much. Whether he gave his word that he's going to start learning, I don't know. Tanit Ve'Eliyahu doesn't record that part of the story. We hope so.
We don't know what
the guy said after he started crying. Hopefully it was more than just that he cried. Hopefully it's that he did Maisi B'Poil. You know, in that connection, they tell a story that Rav Chacha Fagin Hayad, he was the Mashpia in Temchut Mimim in Otvotsk between the wars. He was the Friedrich of a secretary. He's one of the big chassidim, as everybody knows. Anyway, so back in Russia at one point, the story goes, one time he's sitting in a basement and forbringing with the Talmudim and teaching them or whatever it was they were doing anyway. This is, you know, in Soviet times when everything had to be in secret. And all of a sudden they start hearing noises that make it sound like the NKVD is coming. And then everybody started, talking to them, giving his orders about improving in Torah and Tefillah and Avodah and everything, and they're crying. So Rav Chacha asks them, what would happen if now all of a sudden we heard that the NKVD is coming? And they say, well, we'd start hiding, we'd jump out the windows, we'd scatter. So Rav Chacha says, why wouldn't you cry? What good would crying do at a time like that in Maisa Bepoil? So Rav Chacha tells him, in that case, same thing over here. It's very nice that you're crying over the giver his orders that I told you, but we don't need just crying. We need Maisa Bepoil. So yeah, hopefully in the story in Tanit Ve'Eliyahu also, hopefully it wasn't just crying. Hopefully it was Maisa Bepoil, but yeah, it doesn't record. Yeah. Okay. Getting back to Bikur Cholim. When a sick person doesn't recover from his illness unless Hashem forgives him for all his averes. So in other words, Maharsha says the Yisurim clean up his averes. So now when he recovers, it's a sign that the Eibishter forgave all of his averes. Yon Yaakov also mentions the point that, after all, we said before, he was feverish, and the fever is like a fire of Gehenna. So now if the fever has gone away and he's recovering, then it means he's been saved from Gehenna. So it means the Eibishter has forgiven him. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Haseleach l'chol aveinechi, Hashem forgives all of your averus, Haroifa l'chol tachloichi, Hashem heals all of your illnesses. So we see that it goes in that order. First there's slicha, and then refuah. In fact, Maharsha mentions, you know, in Shemona Esrei, we have the bracha Slachlanu, and we have the bracha Rafa'enu. Really, the Gemara mentions in Megillah, when it goes through why we have the Seder of Shemona Esrei the way it is, really it ought to be, on the face of it, it ought to be like that, Slachlanu, and then Rafa'enu. The only reason we put Re'enu Vanyenu in between is the Gemara explains a reason over there why you need it to be in between over there, because specifically that bracha has to be seventh, but and because Rafa'enu has to be eighth. The Gemara has a whole sugya in Megillah. The Gemara has a whole sugya in Megillah in the second parak about why the brachas of Shemona Esrei are in the order that they are. But if it weren't for that, then Slicha and Refuah should be one right next to the other, like you have this pasuk. Rav Hamnuna says another point. The person who recovered from a dangerous sickness, chozer limei alumav, he returns to his youthful years. In other words, the Eibishter makes him stronger even than he was before. Shenemar, as the pasuk says in Eov, in one of Elihu's speeches in Eov, he describes a person who's dangerously ill, and the malachim come and defend him in Shemayim, and then the pasuk says, "Rutafash besoroi minoyar." His flesh is rutafash from youth. What is rutafash? It's short for two words, rotov and pash. Rotov means moist and fresh. And pash means enlarged, means big and enlarged. So it means the person's health is his skin is fresher and his health is greater than it was before. Partially to have medically, you know, a person has certain kinds of illnesses, and afterwards they have antibodies for them, so they come out stronger from it than they were before. So we see that Rebbe Hamnuna says it means he returns to the time of his youth. Now, there's a few different meanings of that. First of all, it means, as we're saying over here, b'gashmius, that it means he feels younger and stronger. But in addition, it also goes with this point that the Eibishter forgives his Averis. It means, in other words, there's an explanation. Seleach would mean like the Eibishter forgives, but not completely. But now we're saying like he returns to the days of his youth before he ever had the Averis. The effects of those Averis are cleaned up completely. So that's an even higher thing than a Seleach v'chol avinechi. Another pasuk in Tehillim, we mentioned the pasuk before, Hashem Yisadenu al Eretz Tavoi, the second half of the pasuk says, Kol Mishkavoi Hafachta v'cholyo, during his illness, you turned over all of his bedding. Omer Rav Yosef, Loi Mashem Meshakeach Talmudei. So Rav Yosef says, another meaning of that, though, is that it means that the person ends up forgetting his learning. In other words, the Rif explains that the vort is that the bed is comparable to a well-made bed is comparable to learning in that you make a bed nicely with the pillows and blankets, everything arranged in its proper way. And the same way learning is also supposed to be arranged, that a person has arranged in his head the proper way, everything the sudder in his mind. So now when the Pasuk is saying that you turn over his bedding, in other words, like his bedding gets all disarranged, sort of Yosef is explaining the result of that is also that it means also when a person is sick, sometimes it can cause that all his learning, which is like that well-made bed, becomes disarranged and he forgets his learning, as the Gemara is going to go on to say that happened to Rabbi Yosef himself. Now, with that said though, there are Gusois that do not have this words Kol Mishkavoi Hafachta B'Cholyo over here. The Ran does not have those words in his Gusa, and according to him, Rabbi Yosef is darshining another meaning of the Pasuk that said Yoshuv L'mei Alumov, that a person returns to his youthful years. So Rabbi Yosef is saying that Yemei Alumov, which means youthfulness, is also Meloshin Ha'aloma, Meloshin forgetting. So it means Rabbi Yosef is darshining from that very same Pasuk. Sure, he ends up being youthful and stronger and healthier than he was before, but he returns to a time when he's forgotten his learning because he ends up forgetting it as a result of his illness. Or a different explanation is that he returns to his youthful times. When he was young, he didn't know these things, so now it's like the clock is rewound to when he was younger, and he doesn't know these things again, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, happened to Rabbi Yosef himself. The Maharal actually makes a point in connection with all of this. We're saying Hashem forgives his Avedas and Hashem restores him to his youth, etc. The verdict is that basically, Hashem is giving him a clean slate. Hashem is allowing him to start all over again. After having gone through this experience of illness, it becomes almost like a beriah chadasha, and therefore he starts fresh. But Rabbi Yosef is pointing out, on the other hand, there is the downside of it, that it means that he can forget his learning. As in fact, we have the example, Rabbi Yosef was sick, and his learning became very difficult for him. He forgot it. Now, Ion Yaakov points out in particular, we actually find in many places in the Gemara, that in several places in the Gemara, that Rabbi Yosef is called Sinai. Rabbi Yosef was very bucky in Mishnayos and Braisis, and he had a great memory, but now, as a result of his illness, he forgot it. So this is, when he says that a person forgets his illness, when he forgets his learning as a result of illness, he's talking from personal experience. Ahadre, Abaya Kamei, and Abaya would have to repeat it to him and restore his knowledge that way. Thus we find in many places in Shas, Omer of Yosef, Lashmili, Homilsa, we find in quite a few places in Shas, where Rabbi Yosef, Yad Yosef, and Yad Yosef over here, and the Soros of Shas, and the Gemara lists like eight places in Shas, where Rabbi Yosef says, I didn't hear of this teaching, V'omale Abaya, and Abaya would have to tell him, At Amritlon, you're the one who told it to us, and Mohammas Nisa Amritlon, and he told it to us based on this Braisa. So Rabbi Yosef had previously taught it to his Talmidim, but now, as a result of his illness, he forgot it all. Mm-hmm. And Abaya had to help him reconstruct it. Yeah. So now, in this connection, the Gemara mentions a similar thing that happened with Rebbe. Rebbe had a gomer twas esrei ape halacha. Rebbe had learned 13 different approaches in halacha. Which means, on one level, in other words, what that means is, in other words, this is before Rebbe composed the Mishnayos, as we have them, you had different collections of the teachings of Torah Shebaal Peh that had been said by different Chachamim. Every Chacham would teach in his own style. So there were 13 collections like that. We have our Mishnayos, as Rebbe composed them, are based on the way Rebbe Meir taught it, but you'd have a different one the way Rebbe Yehuda taught it, and a different one the way Rebbe Yossi taught it, and so forth. So you had 13 different styles like that. Agmer Rav Chiya Zayin Min Hoyin. Rebbe taught Rav Chiya, his Talmud, seven of those collections or of those approaches. Later on, Rebbe was sick. The Gemara tells us in Bava Metzia there were many years when Rebbe was sick with various illnesses as a kapara for the generation. Ahadri Rav Chiya Kamei Hanu Zayin Api. So Rav Chiya was able to refresh his memory on the seven. The Agmari that Rebbe had previously taught Rav Chiya. V'shita Az V'luhu. But now there are six that are missing because he hadn't taught them to Rav Chiya. So how can Rav Chiya reteach them to him? Why 13 and 7? So Marsha points out, we often find that 13 and 7 are special numbers when it comes to the Torah. We even see that Amam has 13 Ikrim. So then he says, you know, you have the Gemara talks about in various places, Mem Tes Ponim La Torah. There are 49 approaches to Torah. So evidently the 13 are like the most central out of them. And then out of those, 7 are what he taught to Rav Chiya. Ion Yaakov explains an interesting idea. Since we're saying, yeah, we have Mem Tes Ponim La Torah. The Torah itself is divided into four parts, Pshat, Remez, Zerush, and Soid. So therefore, the 48 parts, each of them, the 48 approaches, then each one is Pshat, Remez, Zerush, and Soid in 12 of them, and the 49th includes all of them, so therefore, you have within the 49th itself, you have the 13th approach. So that's how you get 13, that's how you relate 13 to 49. Anyway, so the point is that now six of them were lost. However, Havah Hukatsra, there was a certain laundryman, a laundryman, a person who would who washed people's clothes for a living.
Okay.
He would overhear Rebbe when he was learning to himself those six. So the guy maybe didn't understand them, but at least he had heard the wording. So he remembered them. So Rav Chiya now went and learned them from this laundryman, that the laundryman was able to tell these over, and Rav Chiya learned them from him. And now Rav Chiya is able to go and tell them over to Rebbe. So now Rebbe had all 13 again. From then on, when Rebbe would see this laundryman, he would say, Omale Rebbe, after Osisa Osi Ve'eschia, you made me and Chia, because when you teach somebody Torah, then the Pasuk continues, considers it as if you fathered him. So now, in effect, like you fathered me and Chia by teaching us these areas of Torah that we didn't know. Ikadamri, Hochi Omale, another version is that Rebbe tells him, Ata Asisa es Chia v'Chia osa oisi. You made Chia by teaching him, and Chia made me by teaching me.
Is that he forgot his learning during the sickness? Or?
During the sickness, that's what we're saying. It's another example of a Chacham forgetting his Torah during the sickness. Yeah. Marsha mentions over here, now in Ksubas, we had a few weeks ago, we had the story of a laundryman who we said over there, there was a baskel that said anybody who was there when by Rebbe's Petira is Zoycha L'chaya Olam Abba, and there was a laundryman who wasn't there and he was very upset and he fell off a roof, etc. Marsha says this may be the same laundryman. So he has a Shaitlus to Rebbe, and therefore he really missed the fact that he hadn't been there by Rebbe's Patira, and in fact the Bas Kol came and said he's also Zoycha L'chaya
and Labo. He was killed
when he fell off the roof, yeah. The Maharal also says, symbolically also, a laundryman is someone who's always cleaning up stains from things. So this is a great high-level Baal Tshuva, somebody who has stains on his neshama, but he's working very, very hard, as much as he can, to clean them up, and therefore we're saying he had the schus to teach Rebbe, even though maybe he didn't understand what he's learning, but he had the schus to teach Rebbe Chia, who in turn taught Rebbe, and he had the schus to be a Ben Olam Haba as a result of his association with Rebbe.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Yom Mashiach Gola, Sof Aleph Shvat. So you have the pasuk in Zechariah that says that in Mashiach's times, old men and women will be sitting in the streets of Yerushalayim, and you have the pasuk in Yirmiyah that says that in the cities of Yehuda and in the streets of Yerushalayim, you'll be hearing Kol Chosen v'Kol Kala. So this is Sicha, where the Rebbe talks about what happened to Kol Kvudah Basmelech Pnima, what happened to the Tznius of the Jewish woman. So therefore, but the thing is, these Nevuos are talking about the time of Tchias HaMesim, when there won't be a Yetzahara anymore. As the Pasuk says, Gam Oivav Yashlim Itay, that Hashem, when a person is doing what Hashem wants, even his enemies make peace with him, and the Gemara mentions elsewhere, that means the Yetzahara. Therefore, we don't need to worry so much about Kol Kvudah Basmelech Pnima, to the extent that it is now, and therefore the women can be sitting over there in public, and you can hear Kol Kala. Because therefore there won't be a Yetzahara for Araya, so there, and therefore you don't have to worry about Kol Kvudah Basmelech Pnima, about the tznius to that extent. There's many places in Chassidus, by the way, where it also talks about the idea that nowadays we don't have Kol Kala. You think about it, by a wedding, the Chosin says Harayat Mekudeshesli, the Kala doesn't say anything. And we have, that's represented also by the fact that in Shemana Esrei, we say it silently, and the Osid Lava, it's not going to be like that. Okay. Continuing with halachas of a woman who gave birth, we talked about yesterday what happens during the first 3 days after the birth and during the next 4 days after that. What happens after 7 days have passed? Then even if the woman says, Tzricha ani, I need you to do something for me that involves Chilul Shabbos, then from there until 30 days, she has the din of a Chola She'en Bo Sakana, which, as we learned in previous simonim, means that you can have a goy do things for her, but not a yid. On the other hand, if it's a matter of warming up, if it's a matter of warming up the room for her, if she's feeling cold, then if there's no goy available, then you can even have a yid turn on the heat, even if it's during the summertime, because during the 30 days after the birth, she's very easily chilled, and it can be dangerous to her health.
Well, thank you.